Diamond Cluster Wavelengths, show number 6.
Diamond Cluster Wavelengths Podcast. Discussions about the open cell phone, platform for inventing the future.
Welcome to the 6th edition of the Diamond Cluster Wavelengths Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Diamond Cluster International, a premier global management consulting firm that helps leading organizations develop and implement growth strategies, improve operations, and capitalize on technology. The discussions here, like the firm, will cover a combination of business and technology. I'm Dan Bricklin. With me is John Sfiocla, Diamond Cluster Vice Chairman and Global Managing Director of Innovation and Research. Hey, John.
Hey, Dan. How's it going?
Doing okay. With us today is Toby Redshaw, Corporate Vice President, Corporate IT Strategy, Architecture, and E-Business at Motorola. He is responsible for Motorola's enterprise-wide IT blueprint, including the integration of IT solutions across Motorola's various business sectors, anticipating IT industry future directions, and establishing the IT strategy, architecture, and standards across the company globally. He also has primary responsibility for emerging technology, the intranet, common platforms, and all IT deals. He is chairman of the RosettaNet Telecom Council and chairman Kellogg Innovation Network, run by the Center for Research in Innovation and Technology at Kellogg Business School. Mr. Redshaw joined Motorola in 2001 following a 17-year career with Federal Express, where he held several senior IT and business positions in Asia, Latin America, and the United States. He holds dual degrees in philosophy and economics and is a fellow with the Institute for Global Futures. Welcome, Toby.
Glad to be here. Morning, guys.
Good morning. To have you.
Thanks for joining us. I want to start out with how do cell phones fit into Motorola's internal IT environment? How do you use them yourselves as part of running a big IT organization?
I think three ways. One that is obvious, right? It's our key communication device. I think, like many business professionals and consumers, it's part of the three things. It's the set of the three things that you're never without, right? Your car keys, your wallet, and your cell phone. So that's an easy one. The second thing that we use the device for here, which is not as common, is I think there's part of our culture is we use it as an accelerator. That not an interrupter, but an accelerator, because a cell phone can be an interrupter. When you have something that instead of a 5-email chain and a 24-cycle on response, you have two ways to get to people through your cell phone urgently, which is, of course, calling them or through the text interface, and you get an immediate answer. I think having that woven into your culture is a definite accelerator, and after being here 4 years, I've seen that it is definitely used in that way. It's not used as, well, I'll just use it instead of email, but I'll use it for the important things when a quicker answer, when there's dependencies based on that answer or on that input happens. And then the third way is very innovative ways that we're using the devices, which are no longer just cell phones. I mean, the device is expanded to be so much more than that. Our whole seamless mobility play where you can roam from one type of network to another, walk from your LAN system and communicate over your LAN and seamlessly go to the carrier network, for example. So it's those three ways, sort of the standard way, the accelerator way, and then the innovative way.
So you actually do that? You actually do that roaming from what you go from local voice over IP right onto the switch network or what?
Yes, absolutely. We have a product that we're selling in that space, and that is key to our whole strategic vision. Our strategic vision is really not about just the device. It's about being able to provide a seamlessly mobile set of solutions, a platform, if you will, to consumers and enterprises that allows you to move between networks, allows you to communicate to the people and the things and the data information that you need when you need it, regardless of whether you're in your home, you're in your office, you're out on the carrier network, or you're in your car. And we play, as you know, we play in all of those spaces.
Toby, do you see the innovation in that area coming more from the carriers on the retail end? That is, you know, me and my five kids and my wife and our cell phones and my EVDO card from Sprint and so forth. What do you see the corporations who have, you know, the need to migrate across these different networks and provide data? Which ecosystem do you think is moving faster in terms of innovation?
Oh, it's the producers. It's not the consumers. The consumers do not, by and large, have the capacity. Very rarely have the capacity or the infrastructure or all of the moving parts to enable that. It's companies like us working with the carriers on our various product lines to build that. I mean, it's an architectural big feat, big challenge. It's not something that an individual could cobble together readily.
And are you seeing what kind of corporations are you seeing adopted? Is it the banks of the world? Is it the manufacturers? Is it, you know, doesn't matter? It's different kinds of companies?
Say again?
I'm assuming it's not just how Motorola uses this stuff, but it's also how you, in conjunction with the carriers, then go and sell it into a Grainger or somebody like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, the carriers are partners. They are a significant channel. And there's some very, as you mentioned, there's some very innovative thinking going on that side also.
Okay, so it sounds like in your opinion, the large corporations in conjunction with the carriers and you guys are going to come up with the innovative practices for the, you know, for the devices that go across different kinds of networks.
Yeah, the large, especially, well, in the consumer space, the large corporation is not playing, but in the enterprise place, you always need that early adopter, that you know, sort of the alpha customer to help launch those things and test them and do your alphas and your betas. So yeah, it's definitely a three-way look.
Can those customers build the things themselves without any help from you or the carrier? I mean, what facilities are built into the phones? I'm thinking in terms like the original Palm Pilot. Apparently, you know, everybody who bought it had one other application that was very niche, but was very important to them. Are there such things that we can do with?
Yeah, there's two layers. There's a lot of layers, but there's two important layers to look at. One is the infrastructure and service layer, which provisions the capability for a device to move seamlessly across networks or just work properly in one network. That's a lot of engineering. That's a lot of technology. Then the second layer, which I think you're referring to more, is at the app layer. Mm-hmm. What can I do to customize, to personalize, to improve, make it more a me device? And that is not difficult to do. Individuals can do that. I mean, start with something as simple as ringtones, and then move on to applications. I think what you're going to see over time are communities of developers serving the device market. Because, I mean, let's face it, the device is a computer.
Mm-hmm.
It happens to do a lot of other things, but it's got computer chips in it. It's got memory. It's a computer. It's got a screen.
So what things do you leave open that independent software developers can take advantage of? Like, when I switch from one network to another, is an indication sent to any old program so that I can fire up things depending on what that network is, or how fast the connection is, and or what's expensive and what's cheap?
That level of sort of QoS understanding and of being able to interface with, as I move from the big screen to the small screen, for example, my home network set-top box environment, and walk out and leave and move to my small screen cell phone network, and then move into my automobile, that technology has to be able to support exactly what you're saying. And it has to be done through an ecosystem of not just us and the carrier, but also if a large enterprise at a future date needs something ported to that environment, especially on our devices like the Q that we announced, which is essentially a next-generation phone plus PDA plus application platform, then yes. Now, is all of that mature? Are there giant development communities out there now supporting these things? No, it's a very nascent environment. And are all of our devices open? No. I mean, depending on the specific solution that a company and a consumer wants, there's differing levels of value for having an open system. In fact, some consumers, some enterprises prefer it not to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're afraid somebody might do something they shouldn't, but then they lose the, as David Reed pointed out in our first podcast, they lose the option value of what could happen. The upside, you're basically capping the upside.
Well, yes and no. You're shutting off one of many, many avenues through which new value can come. It's not the only source of applications. It's not the only source of modification. And I think the
but traditionally it's a major one. I mean, the you know the web came out of somebody where you wouldn't expect it with Berners-Lee. A lot of the protocols we use today were not the ones done by the big standards committee. Even in our case of the spreadsheet, it was two guys in an attic in a suburb of Boston rather than...
I know one of those guys.
Yes, rather than, Xerox PARC or IBM Watson, where they were actually trying to do such things.
Yeah, no, I agree that the model, if you look back historically, the model for invention and innovation is... one that has got built-in surprises at where things come from, how things evolve. It's certainly not all about big labs, big corporations. Now, a lot of it is, but a lot of it isn't. But I'd suggest that historical view doesn't map extremely well to the current state of mobile devices. I think it's early days. We're sort of at a tipping point in the internet. I mean, I've got 600 million IP devices out on the internet. In a few years, that number will be in the billions, and it will include a layer of mobile devices, a layer of appliances, a layer of sensor nets, a swarm of tags. Feeding sensor nets. So I think as that changes, and that's a huge change that's coming, then you'll see these other communities and this individualization, this ability to add to that come along. But I think it's evolutionary. I think it's too early now to say.
But it's inevitable, you think, that this distributed development and all is pretty much where it has to end up?
I think it will be distributed just because of the nature of pervasive IP networks. I mean, the end nodes of the internet are everywhere.
You've done a lot of work with service-oriented architecture.
I have.
Yes, and how does that, because that's sort of like ad hoc throwing things together. I mean, a lot of the stuff that's been successful publicly, like with Google Earth and Google Maps and stuff and Amazon, were, you know, people throwing together things that wasn't necessarily foreseen. How does that fit in? What have you learned doing that in terms of putting together things ad hoc?
Two big surprises that we knew they were there, but we didn't know that they were going to be as impactful until we'd actually done some experimentation and had our put our arms around this stuff. And one is the development and provisioning of solutions when you're using coarse-grained objects, big web services in a service-oriented architecture environment, is the conversation starts to change with the people that want the solution. The conversation between the technical and the business people changes, and it changes to a conversation about process flow and process engineering, because you're talking about how these objects fit together, which is a radically different conversation than what is it you want to do and let me create specs around that. You have a much more fluid, much more high context conversation than you did before. And I honestly think the biggest problem with technical development, especially in an IT shop, is the communication gap between the technology people and the business people. So now if you create a context where it's all around coarse-grained objects, if you will, web services in process flows, you find two things. Very happy business people because you're finally speaking their language, and the fastest, best prototyping you've ever seen, which is, again, another big ad for IT. Now, it's early days in SOA, right? We have 150 web services, including things going across commercial transactions, going across the firewall. We're building our mobile portal for internal efforts, but we're already seeing that. The second surprise or the second thing that jumped out at us was you have to be very, very serious, very disciplined about the infrastructure that this lives on, which I think is an analog to what we were talking about earlier, separating the applications and the infrastructure layer. And so you need web services management, you need web services security, you need directory, of course, you probably need some governance and some policy management, but you also need to create a common, simple interface to make all of that manageable. 2 years ago, anybody in this field, you would have said, okay, for enterprise, you bought those four things together and off you go. That just simply is not the case, and I think that may lead to some changes and some consolidation in that arena.
Interesting. So you think the provisioning is still complex right now, if you're going to go to that kind of layered architecture?
Yeah, because these things behave very differently than normal programs. So almost like the telecom industry, you need a QoS, quality of service capability. You need a monitoring ability. You need to be very, very serious about the security layer on this, because these things are different in as much as they have payloads. Mm-hmm. And so that, payload, it's not a coincidence that that's also, a term used in the armament industry.
Mm-hmm.
So are cell phones part of this? Do you have, these SOA, these services being delivered electronically through IP or something to cell phones, to applications running on them? Is that part of what you do internally?
Oh, sure. I mean,
examples?
One of the interesting ones we've got in test right now is, one we've got in production is all the directory services. I can get all of those off of my cell phone, which are the very simple but highly used ones. Another one is if you think about it, it's just a smaller screen computing device. So how do I take the activities and the information that might be more useful in a more timely way and segregate those and push them out to the mobile devices? Like whether it's order status or whether it's a customer alert or any of the things that you would normally do or see through your device. I mean, one of the big ones is your email, right? It's a portable email. That's been a big deal now for several years.
So you have cell phones making SOAP calls and stuff like that over HTTP?
I'm not sure exactly how the that works, but I'm pretty sure they're not making soap calls. I think it's a push from a portal layer at this point, but undoubtedly they will.
Uh-huh. You talked about this growth in prototyping and what simplicity of protocols and stuff. Is that what's this? You said there's this was a big growth in prototyping because of SOA and stuff.
Yeah, the conversation to build the to get an agreement on, okay, what is it that you want, is a different type of conversation. It's now about process flows, sometimes very granular, sometimes a little more high level, because that is the language business people think and work in, right? The whole thing is a set of business processes. So if I'm now having a component-based process conversation that is a richer, better conversation, what that does, it doesn't really change the amount of prototyping you do. It changes the speed with which you do it. We had in a very early test, and we, I think it's an important point to note that we jumped in. While this is conceptually pretty simple stuff, it is very learning intensive, and the devil is in the details. So we intentionally jumped in the deep end of the pool very early on, with an idea that, you know, when we fail fast, we probably learn as much as when we build in a normal mode. So we went down the path with a couple of companies and did some tests in this area, and the business analyst came back and said, thank you. Finally, you monkeys are talking our language. And the second thing they said, which was even better, was, and you know what? That's the fastest prototyping you've ever done, and it's exactly what we asked for, and you've never done that for us before. You've always come back with something that needed six or seven changes, which was this, the state of IT. And here I'm talking about IT solutions rather than external products.
So rapid prototyping of throwing things together really pays off in this case. And
yes,
the fact
it's a different model for IT. And then layer on top of that what you're really doing this for, which is the very old manufacturing idea of component reuse.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the question is, how do we do that on the cell phone to let us prototype all sorts of interesting uses of whatever you would do because you're portable or because you know things about what's going on? I mean, the simple thing of, I know when I own roaming, I don't want to do long calls because I get billed for roaming, but I don't get billed for in-network or something, you know. So you stare at the display. You learn to do that the hard way. But that could be done automatically, you know, with a different dial tone or something like that. These would be things that individuals could experiment with.
Yeah, I think you're going to see two things there. The mental framework is going to be about my multiple devices and points of contact with my extended network. And I'm going to be able to move seamlessly between my extended network, which is me connecting with people, me connecting with things, and me connecting with information. And it shouldn't matter, and it won't matter whether I am going through my Motorola set-top box wireless LAN, or I am actually going through the set-top box into a cable network, or I am on a cell phone, or I am in my car. So in that framework, you start to think in terms of intelligently managed nodes and handoffs. You don't really necessarily think about, I'm putting a bunch of apps on this device or on that device or on that device. Then the next layer on top of that is presence and understanding the particular context, because then I can layer in the intelligence that you're talking about. Now, whether it's the intelligence of, you know, where's the nearest gas station, or some new form of advertising that says, hey, as I drive through this mesh network, it tells me, do you know that it looks at my personal profile and said, "Hey, you know, you need to go to Home Depot to get these things, and it's right around the corner."
Yeah, though I don't think individuals are going to program that for themselves to have advertising pushed
to
them.
Yeah, and the second point is, while to a small part of the community, programming stuff for yourself is interesting, I think it's a very, very small minority. What I think we're really talking about is development communities that program mm-hmm. things for the phones, sure. especially as you see more peer-to-peer stuff. But that will happen in the same speed and same evolution as commercial communities also.
Yeah, I mean, the Dan Bricklands of the world are fairly rare, you know. Yeah, I'm at Harvard Business School. I need a spreadsheet. I think I'll go make one.
I've met that
millions
guy.
Millions of people use it afterwards. I mean, it only takes one person to come up with it, and it spreads like wildfire if it's useful.
Oh, I absolutely agree. Agree.
So peer-to-peer you see coming about? Further, yeah, more
I
and more peer-to-peer?
I don't think there's – I think peer-to-peer is it's not on the doorstep. But it's coming. I think it's absolutely the logical extension of a world that has a sea of devices, a sea of appliances, and a sea of sensor nets. It is just mathematically difficult to understand the throughput of systems like that being managed through completely managed through central checkpoints.
What's your sense, Toby, in terms of how open those APIs are going to be, especially for identity and for security? I mean, in a certain sense, the personal computer revolution, I would say, might be termed follow that 8-bit bus, you know.
Yep.
I mean, in terms of they actually, you know, when IBM decided to do the 8-bit bus and make that work, and when they lost the patenting case before that, you know, that kind of opened life up. Is it your sense that, because, I mean, obviously you guys are in the thick of it, and you probably also have some mornings you wake up on one side of the bed where you say, gee, it's great to be with the carriers and have them as a channel partner. Other mornings you may wake up on the other side of the bed and say, boy, if we could just go straight to the market and be the, you know, provider of all components to everybody, that would be great. So kind of what's your sense of how open those layers are going to be in that ecosystem?
I would take the PC as the analog here. Mm-hmm. I think you won't see a radical churning of the applications industry just because we have mobile devices. I think what you will see is the same sort of distribution and opportunities that you have. Have today. I do think there will be the continued momentum towards open standards and to ecosystems. I think that is absolutely the way things are going. The whole play with my competitors, compete with my competitors, will become more and more prevalent. And the other macro trend that's going on in the economy is that each year, the component of GDP, which is made up from service / experience, is growing. Mm-hmm. I think that is a big democratizing influence. If service is, it's one of the things that smaller enterprises, smaller companies, smaller groups can appear big in. Service is about personal interaction. It's about consistency of experience, it's about authenticity, and that really has nothing to do, on the face of it, with giant scale. Mm-hmm. Now, I've always said that small agile beats big slow, but big agile kills small agile. So I think there's down the line you will see the same sort of community development and an embracing of open standards that you've seen over the last 20, 30 years growing and growing using the network of PCs as the analog. And I think you'll see it accelerate somewhat. But I think there's something there's something coming that people don't pay a lot of attention to. This new environment gives large enterprises a real ability to make breakthroughs if they can become big agile. And I think that's different than behaving as if you were a small company. And there are some companies that do a great job of that, right, like Gore and others. But I think it's going to be a new thing, and I think it's going to be about the intelligent use of your devices seamlessly mobile across across the networks that you use. And and I think this is important because the scarcest resource that we have is time. And these things can make your connections to your things, your people, your information that much more productive and give you back time. So I think that that is where that ties back into agility for the future of large enterprises.
Yeah, somewhat different, but I think somewhat related note. Part of the, I would argue, part of the slowness in the adoption of some of these things has to do with the way that we allocate spectrum in the United States. In that, you know, there's not a whole lot of good deregulated spectrum. Do you get a sense that we're going to make progress in that area, or do you think we'll continue to live in very, you know, high-frequency, low-propagation spectrum in terms of the deregulated part of the market in order to, as an enabler for this? I mean, you know,
very hard to predict, but there are monumental market forces coupled with an amazing level of innovation in this space and in this country that I have to believe push that in a way that brings the value to the end user, which is the basis of, you know, any economic venture or the next user in the chain, the consumer, in whatever your supply network is. So I just believe those forces will push things in the right way. Boy, if I could predict exactly what's going to happen in that space, you know, I'd be working on Wall Street. But it's as J.P. Morgan said about the stock market, right? They asked him how it was going to work, what it was going to do next, and he goes, oh, sure, I can tell you that. It's going to fluctuate.
Hey, a different question for you. I mean, you have one of the more interesting jobs in corporate America, I think. And I mean, you have a global perch on some of the new end user devices and new applications and so forth. What countries or companies or both are doing really fascinating, interesting things? Because, you know, depending upon how you count it, the United States is somewhere like 20th in wireless broadband adoption.
There have always been very, very interesting things happening in Korea and Japan. The broadband penetration in Korea, of course, is one of the big drivers there. But there are one of the things I love about my job at this point in time is that innovation is popping up everywhere. Eastern Europe, Israel, China. An amazing mobility solutions in China with retail already.
Like what?
What kinds of stuff, Toby?
Just people figuring out that, well, okay, I have a retail, big things attached to point of sale through mobile devices, back through inventory and supply chain, through service. The Chinese economy is a much more retail economy than people would think. Areas where we still have layers and channels in Europe and the United States are direct retail markets in China. The Chinese legislation, as you suspect, but it's just a little bit ironic in some ways from a Western perspective, that one of the big legislative sets of rights there are consumer rights, which, of course, in one way makes sense. If you have a communist government, then we want the end consumer to have real rights and real power. But then that becomes sort of a very Western thinking that consumers have a lot of power and a lot of rights. So not very clear on that, but very interesting state over there. And there are things popping up from everywhere. If you keep track of where all the great ideas are coming from, the short answer is they are coming from very surprising places. They're coming from everywhere. So it's a very exciting time, and it's a time when companies of 20 and 30 people are creating solutions that then can become enterprise ready and an enterprise usable within a very short time frame, which just never in IT has been true in any large sense.
Like, what's a poster child example of that? What particular application?
Business activity monitoring.
What would it be?
2.5 years ago, being able to take, and I think this speaks to the future of the internal networks the networks that that IT uses inside an enterprise. They're going to come up out of the basement. It's no longer going to be your old middleware model. It's going to be an intelligent nervous system type approach. And I'll give you one example. We found a little company in Denver called the Dante Group that had 28 employees and had this very clever application that lives on top of your middleware and proactively manages and monitors intelligently the data going through. So you no longer have to wait for it to hit an application and then have a report and go, oh, I better go work on those things. Those look like exceptions. It immediately alerts the right people. So we've launched this in a very important part of our company and supply chain with an external vendor called Foxconn that we use. And it's taken work out of the system, made us faster, improved the quality management of some of those aspects. And this was a company that had 28, 30 employees. Now, it got acquired by a larger company. Over time, it's now part of Web Methods. But this was essentially a small company saying, hey, we've got this great idea. Now, we do some of those that actually don't work at all, but you've got to, what's the old term that my grandmother used to use? You've got to break some eggs if you're going to make an omelet. Yeah. So
these were things that, because of standards of various sorts, you could just plug it in into an infrastructure. Was this? Did it use cell phones at all,
dropped right on top of our middleware. I think it took 2 or 3 weeks to launch the first one. Little companies in the EII space are other good examples internally. There's some very good emerging technology in an asset management, and I know that sounds dull and boring, but if you put 1,000 CIOs in the room and said, all right, which of you know exactly where all of your assets are and how are they utilized, your IT assets, software, hardware, all through all the networking layers, it's a very tiny percentage, and normally out of the financial industry, who have older locked-down data centers that can answer that question. Now, if take that as a manufacturing, take the manufacturing comparison of that. If I ran a factory for you two and you came to me and said, all right, you've been putting $1 billion worth of machine tools in there every year for the last 10 years. What have you got? What's your utilization? I went, you know, don't really know, and I'm not sure if they're all still there or not. And, you know, we've got lots of different ones. I mean, mind-boggling. You'd shoot me on the spot, but that's the nature of IT. It's not really anybody's fault. It's just how the thing evolved before a ubiquitous intelligent IP network.
And so have you learned about how to build things so that it's easy to be able to add those things and have that innovation?
Oh, yeah. For the past 3.5-4 years, our whole IT strategy from a technical perspective has rested on federated, loosely coupled architectures. We want this to be sort of a Lego model. If I want to pull out that piece of Lego and put in another one, it should be relatively straightforward. Now, we're evolving the typical legacy spaghetti that everybody had towards that, and I think we're probably in the top 3-5% globally doing it, and we spend a lot of time talking to other companies and helping them learn how some of the pitfalls we went through. But I absolutely believe the future of enterprise computing is a loosely coupled, federated, on-demand environment. And I believe software, there'll be a point where software is a two-year, and we're a little ways from this, but software will be a two-year game. I will buy a solution, or I will construct a solution using some off-the-shelf and some internal web services, and then you will rearrange that map every 2 years to stay competitive, or you'll be refreshing parts of it every 2 years. I mean, I've got 150 web services live being shared around the company today. What happens when I have 1,000 of those? What happens when I have 2,000? And when does then all of my future needs become me rearranging my pieces of Lego?
Now, is that creeping into the design of your communication systems? Of loosely coupled, federated standards?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to go through... It's going to go through all the layers, and I think we're putting in a multi-protocol communication system here. I think all modern companies are going to go through that. Go down that path.
So the phones are all. I don't have to use your set-top box. I can cobble something together with Linksys and Linux or something.
Oh, right now we have we have phones that'll work on the 802.11 and the carrier network.
Carriers, and that's what.
Yeah,
okay.
And it doesn't know what your it doesn't know what your access point is. Now, from a security and a management perspective, you better have somebody who does know what your access points are, but manages those properly. Because once you start to go big with that, and you want to manage security, that's very, very important.
Anything else before John or Toby before we end?
No.
No, it sounds interesting, Toe. I guess one last question, which is, what do you look at in terms of how fast do you think this stuff is going to grow? And the denominator, I'd like to, you don't have to use this denominator, or multiplier, I'd like to suggest to you, is compared to growth in, let's say, PCs. And, you know, is this going to happen at the same speed as the early ones, or is it going to be five times as fast? When I say growth, I mean growth of devices, software, and services around it.
I think in the next 5 to 7 years, it's going to be a rate of growth that far exceeds even the most exuberant predictions. And I think there are three things... behind that. One is the utility and the design quality, if you will, of the devices. They're just going to do a lot more. They're going to be a lot more intelligent, and they're going to be things you want from a design perspective. I mean, take a look at the Razer, which is you show a person a Razer, and what do they want to do? They want to touch it. When was the last time somebody said, "Ooh, that's a great phone, let me touch that"? And that's just an example of great design. So utility and design. But then the other two things that I think will drive this faster than anybody is envisioning is what's happening to the network. Think about the value proposition and the engagement of an IP network that has 10,000 times more nodes on it. Now, 10,000 times more nodes sounds like a huge growth proposition, but if you add up the trends of computers, IP appliances, sensors, sensor nets, mobile devices, tags on the internet, you are going to see that kind of growth. The value proposition and the engagement opportunities there are simply huge. It'll be like nothing we've seen before. I think the other thing, more to the 5-7 year time frame, is that the promise of intelligent agents will then fold in, and that gets back to what Dan was talking about a little earlier. Intelligent service agents, intelligent agents doing other things for you that tied to things like presence and persona, I think that is going to be the afterburners to the growth in this thing. I think in general, whether you look at history or at science, or technology, that the last 20 years has been characterized by things that if I showed them to you a year before they happened or two and said, look, either this is going to happen or green men from Mars, you would say green men from Mars is more probable. And that's whether it's the mapping of the human genome, the mapping of the SARS genome, the Berlin Wall, carbon nanotubes, a 6-qubit computing device, the things that are happening in material science. Just take the amount of countries that we have that end in the word Stan. If I'd have told you 20 years ago we're going to have that many, you would have got, oh, not a chance that will happen. The dissolution of the Soviet Union, the hockey strike, you know, the list goes on. The Cubs winning a World Series. Oh, that didn't happen.
Yeah, but we got them here.
Yeah, you did, actually. That's there.
Yes,
close enough,
says,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Toby, thank you very much for joining me and John today.
Oh, glad to do it.
This has been another in the Diamond Cluster Wavelengths podcast series covering the open cell phone. For more information about this series of podcasts, go to podcast.diamondcluster.com.